It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on this glorious Saturday morning before Easter. Still tweaking around a little bit with the new electronics around here. We'll get it. If anybody can't hear me, put your hand up.
No, you were fine. It was my mic that did not not on.
Okay. Well, Adam's here too. And we are going to be here for an hour.
That was my fault. Blame me.
Tom's doing his mea culpa. Anyway, we're here for the hour, and we're going to talk about all kinds of fun things, but it'll be exactly what we want to talk about, unless somebody out there decides to pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, and then we will put you on air virtually immediately, because those are the rules around here. And we can talk about whatever you want to talk about, whether it's just a comment or something that's going on, or concerns, but anything to do with money. And these days, what doesn't have to do with money?
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, there's just never quite enough of it to really go around these days. This inflationary cycle we are in and have been in have been very devastating to a lot of people. And we're going to talk a bit today about the possibility of that getting even worse. I know it's on everybody's mind. And
what's that, inflation?
I
don't think that's happening.
Well, there's a short-run version and a long-run version.
Okay, maybe in the long run. Yeah. Shorter run, I think we're in a pretty clear deceleration.
Well, for now, yeah. I think this year we'll do fine, probably.
Yeah, but I would agree.
Longer run, there's still so many things going wrong that people are expressing a lot of concerns, as they should. But I think most people are getting a bit over their skis on the timing of this thing. So we'll see. We'll talk about it.
It was a short week. We had Friday off. The markets were closed, and that was due to the Good Friday Easter holiday. And it was a really relatively calm week despite some big economic news. The market didn't get a chance to react to the jobs report that was released on Friday morning, so we could see a big reaction on Monday morning. The futures did go up when the numbers came out, so that was a positive sign. But the jobs report was actually weaker than expected. So it's one of those cycles where everyone's rooting for less than the best news. It's been a strange quarter, strange week, strange year, and that will continue. We'll talk a bit more about jobs a little bit later on. But for the week, the S&P was basically unchanged. Tech sold off a bit, though, driving the NASDAQ down 1.1%. The NASDAQ's been leading the way higher this year, and it's still up 15.5% year-to-date. The Dow, which has been lagging the other indexes and is only up 1% this year, was up 0.6% this week, so tacked on a little bit more to its very tiny gain for the year. All in all, wasn't a bad week to be an investor. It was just a little bit ho-hum.
Sometimes boring is wonderful.
I welcomed it, honestly.
Yep. Just got to let it settle down and get a new direction.
Dividend and value stocks were more in favor this week, while growth and technology were down. Small and mid-caps were down more than 2%, while large-cap stocks were closer to breaking even. Treasury yields continued to drop, which drove the bond market up more than 1% for the week. Long treasuries were up over 2%, and even tips got in on the action, up almost 1%. Commodities also went up, with the index rising 1.6%. Oil was up over 5%. While gold and silver both posted nice weekly gains. The price of natural gas continues to plummet, though, falling another 7% this week. Didn't think it was possible, but it happened. Mm-hmm. It's been a really wild ride if you've followed the price of natural gas recently over the last year. International stocks were fairly flat during the week, not unlike the U.S. European stocks gained 1%, while Asian markets were off about 0.6%. Emerging markets posted a small weekly gain. So the whole world kind of traded in tandem with the U.S. this week. It was one of those weeks where there was a high correlation. Well, there was a lot of economic data that came out during the week. Not much of it was very positive. Both ISM indexes came in weaker than expected, while the manufacturing index showed a pretty significant contraction. The contraction was actually expected, as the forecast was 47.5, but the level of the contraction that was actually shown, what came in at 46.3, so lower than expected, that was what the miss was. This was the lowest reading since the very early days of COVID, And prior to that, you have to go back to the Great Recession in 2009 to find levels that bad. On the services side, the news wasn't quite so doom and gloom, but the number was still a major miss. The forecast was for 54.4. Anything over 50 shows expansion, but it actually came in at a 51.2, so much lower than what was expected, but still showing a small expansion during the month. The trend is not looking great right now. Both of them are trending down. But one piece of good news out of the report was that the supplier deliveries index fell to 45.8 in March. With that index, anything below 50 shows shorter wait times. So that would indicate that the supply chain issues that have plagued us for the last few years have largely been worked out. So
especially in semiconductors.
Yeah, that is true. That's been a big headache for a lot of businesses over the last 2 years, and it really seems like the majority of it has gone away at this point. Next up was jobs data. Both the weekly initial jobless claims and continuing claims have started to deteriorate. In fact, after a seasonal adjustment to the numbers, the revised numbers that came out for the last few weeks are showing some of the highest numbers since 2021, and they are definitely above the 200,000 mark. This week showed 228,000 versus an expected 200,000. The revision to the number from 2 weeks ago brought that one to 247,000, almost above that key 250,000 mark.
So they reported this week as being down.
I mean, yeah, it was technically.
Yeah, if you get the right comparator.
And that all sounds really bad, but you do have to remember that they just did a revision and they went back and adjusted the entire last year. And the revision was to seasonal adjustments in the number. So I don't know how to really digest all of these numbers because there isn't a precedent for it. It's when you're comparing the numbers to what they were, it's not apples to apples anymore.
No, and the key here is what you alluded to a minute ago. At 250 and up is where we start to get a little concerned.
Yeah.
And that has not been the case for some time now.
Yeah, my next note I had here was that all sounds really bad, but these numbers could actually turn around next week and start trending down. That's the nature of this report. Unless you start seeing it trend over 250,000, that is a very, very reliable indicator of a recession. So that we could very well see that too, and that would be cause for some concern, I would say.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons for concern out there.
Yeah.
But you sure can't put a pattern together in this thing.
You cannot.
All year we've been talking like that.
Yeah,
you just
I know.
Can't see what's next.
It's very, very confusing. We'll talk about the jobs report after the break. And the numbers were not bad, but they weren't great. I'll put it that way.
No, and sometimes it's the Goldilocks moment is when you're close but didn't quite make it, because now the Fed's going to be looking at some things that they haven't been looking at for a long time. And I think the feeling on the street is that we've at least gone to a maybe on stopping rate hikes for a while.
I agree.
And quite frankly, Adam and I both agree that they probably should. But we'll get into a little bit more right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
And I'm Adam Banwee.
And we do have a trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. And you can call Ken at 904-636-7888. A lot of the retail environment nowadays is utilizing self-checkout. And one of the things they discovered with the self-checkout is that there is more of a in retail, they call an inventory shrinkage problem. The other word for that is theft. It's a little bit more clear. The average store that does not have self-checkout has a shrinkage of 1.5%. What does the average store lose if they do, in terms of percent? What percent of shrinkage do they experience using the self-checkout lanes?
Also, if you have one trivia question in about the last month or so. We have not sent out the cards yet because I'm waiting on a new batch from Mr. Bales. And I will get those out to you as soon as we get them. We do have a list of winners that need cards. So just hold on. They're coming.
I'll just go home and pull my alarm bell and he'll be over right away anyway. We can get him that way.
I don't think that's how that works, though.
You're probably right about that. I haven't tested it. All right. Anyway, jobs. It was kind of almost boring, but one thing you're seeing a replacement of high-end jobs with lower-end jobs.
That was pretty clear in these reports.
It's very prominent.
The growth was in the services and hospitality industry, construction, and deliveries, that type of thing. And the shrinking part of the report was in financial services and business services. So they both lost about 50,000, and then leisure and hospitality grew by about 98,000. So when you add all that up, it looks like a lot of people are losing their jobs in finance and taking a job in hospitality.
Yeah, we all know what a terrible time it's been for big tech in California, especially this year. The layoffs are legendary. And Apple was kind of thought to be or said to be sort of not affected by all this. Well, guess what changed?
I don't know. What changed?
Well, all of a sudden at Apple, Tim Cook is not announcing mass layoffs, but he is saying to the people, if you want to keep your job, apply for it again, or you're going to get laid off. So you have to have some kind of a, here's what I've done and here's why I'm valuable thing now, or even at Apple, there is a very good chance you'll be losing your job in tech. How about that?
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's tough out there, and it's going to be that way. I think manufacturing is going to get hurt more. And these are the jobs that really pay. You're looking at $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 a year jobs that are being replaced with the hospitality types and that sort of thing. One way you can make a lot of money, though, apparently, is waiting tables and tending bar. People are sure going out a lot.
Yeah, they are. It's unbelievable how crowded everything is still.
It is. And crazy Uncle Joe's after your tips, so be careful when you get out there and you try to pocket a bunch of them.
The actual numbers that came in for the ADP report showed just 145,000 new jobs compared to 261,000 in February. The estimate for this month was supposed to be 210,000. And then the government report actually the smallest headline number in more than 2 years, 236,000. Mm-hmm. Despite that, the unemployment rate dropped to 3.5%, and average hourly earnings were up 4.2% from a year ago. That sounds decent, but it's actually the smallest number since inflation started surging in 2021.
Yeah, the per hour is not growing like it should.
Well, I mean, there's only so much that the economy can take. It's grown a lot over the last year and a half.
That is true.
And yeah, the price of labor has just gone through the roof. So,
and it's no more available at the higher price than it used to be.
No, it isn't, and that's the really unfortunate part. But
we got to figure this out.
Yeah, it might be if these layoffs continue.
I am seeing a trend though where a lot of people are coming into the workforce. In numerically, there's a lot of people rejoining the workforce. I strongly suspect
their timing is terrible.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? But I strongly suspect it's a case where the people are coming in because they finally are seeing all their PPP money and so on start to dry up. So the excess cash, as they've been calling it for over a year now, has been dipped into, and I've reported on this a couple of times, that money is being dipped into for people to live, and it has a shelf life. You divide how much you got by how many people spending how much a month, and there's an end to it. It's not infinite. And I think as some of these people are watching their bank balances drop, they are probably thinking to themselves, it wouldn't be a bad idea to go back to work.
Yeah, really should have done this a year ago, though, because when jobs were plentiful and it was very easy to find a job. You can see in the numbers the job market is tightening, and even the JOLTS number was down from 12 million to 9 million open jobs, and I don't even believe the 9 million number, but beside the point. In every aspect of the job market, you are seeing contraction right now.
Yep. And, of course, what's the big news of this month, obviously? It's taxes are coming due.
Yeah, it's actually not the 15th, though, the
18th. 15th is a week from today, so that automatically pushes that out to Monday. But Monday's a holiday, a federal holiday for Emancipation Day, so it's actually the next day, which is the 18th. And not that, you know, everybody's going to wait until the 17th to do their taxes anyway.
Probably. Of course.
Yeah, because that's what Americans do. But a lot of people are going to be very disappointed in their refunds this year for many, many reasons. One of them is an increased Social Security amount. And unfortunately, the tax code itself is not indexed to the same degree that the income is. So you've got a 7% increase in tax brackets fighting an 8.7% increase in Social Security. That's going to bump a lot of people who aren't paying any up to the you'll pay taxes on half of it, and it's going to take a lot of those we pay taxes on half people up to 85%. And this is nothing that they did wrong. It is purely tax and inflation. And the Uncle Sam is doing an awful lot of that, and it's got to change. But it won't.
Yeah, good That's luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that, exactly. So what do you do if you're getting a refund? Well, why don't we start with a couple of things you probably shouldn't do.
Like put it all on black?
Like that.
Okay.
That's the gambling part. You should not put it on a prepaid debit card. You should not put it on a gift card.
Yeah, terrible ideas.
Those things are so subject to fraud and corruption that they could be drained out right out from under your nose.
Well, that's not even what I'm thinking. I guess if you have a major project coming up and you are going to be spending it at Lowe's anyway, that's
maybe.
Sometimes they give you a little like a bonus to put it onto the card. So if you have a $100 refund, they give you a $120 card.
Yeah, you got the catch-22 on this one. If you get your taxes done at H&R Block, for example, mm-hmm. they will offer you a 2.75% bonus for putting it on that card.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they charge you about 4% in fees to do it. Now,
awesome.
Did anybody pick up on that math real quickly?
Yeah.
So be very careful. I honestly just don't recommend it.
Just get it deposited, direct deposited.
You can do a direct deposit, absolutely. Or if you want to do something a little more special, they will put all or part of it into a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. And those are wonderful. But the one thing that most people don't think about, which is still a good idea, a tax refund is the only way you can buy a paper I-bond anymore. And they will issue you an I-bond for the exact amount of your refund and send it to you, a hard copy, and it's as good as gold. So if you want to do something a little offbeat, it's still paying a very high rate. I think the annual is somewhere around 7 now. And, of course, they change every 6 months. But if that's something that has been interesting to or sound interesting to you, you can do that as you file your tax return. And everybody should keep that in mind because I suspect it might be one of the better ways to use a refund that I've ever seen.
Yeah. And the refunds are coming fairly quickly this year, at least mine did. I filed early.
Yeah, you got a refund.
Yeah, because I overpaid.
That's pretty much true with everybody.
Yeah, the turnaround was 10 to 14 days, something like that.
Not
so really not bad.
You file electronically?
Yes.
Okay. The key to a quick refund starts with filing electronically.
And giving them your bank account number to do a direct deposit. I think the combination of those things ensures the one of the faster ways of getting a refund.
All right. Well, what happens if you file and you get that dreaded notice that you've already filed?
That is scary.
That is a problem.
That has happened to several people that we know.
Uh-huh.
And
over the years.
Yeah, and usually that is a case of fraud. And Florida is unfortunately one of the hot spots for that type of fraud. And you then immediately need to contact the IRS, and that is going to be a big
pain.
That
is a nightmare.
Yes, it is. The whole thing would be a nightmare. But
all that $80 billion extra that they've been given, how much of that is going to go on people who can answer the phone and give you a good answer on something?
Yeah.
I would think it would be de minimis relative to the probably amount of money. All right, but there is one trick that everybody needs to know, and I'm going to give it to you when we come back. You've got to wait. Don't go anywhere. All right, we've got to take a quick break, and after that, we'll get back into some IRS stuff. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still there. It says, stores that don't have any self-checkout experience an average of 1.5% shrinkage, which you can just reduce in your head to the word theft. What percentage shrinkage do the stores realize who have self-checkout? And it's just a whole number point something like that. So as you would expect, that logically speaking, it would be different, but I'm not going to tell you.
All right.
Unless you get it.
We also, the Joe 13 Golf Classic is coming up. And if you're not familiar with that, that is an event that we sponsor. My wife is on the board of a charity. It's for our friends who lost their 9-year-old boy to cancer a few years back. And he would have been 13 this year. So that's why it's the Joe 13 Classic. It's at Queens Harbor on May 7th. And it's a great, great event every year, really fun, sells out every year too, and it's almost sold out now. It's very, very close. So if you're a golfer and you want to get yourself or a foursome registered, do so soon, because it will probably sell out in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right, tax time. What happens if you've had identity theft and the way you find out is when IRS says, You filed electronically? I'm sorry, you've already filed. And you say, what? Or if you've tried to file it by mail and IRS sends you a letter stating they've already received a return in your name, that's another one of those little red flags, could happen. And if IRS sends you a confirming letter that says your new online account is now established and you didn't make one, well, there's another one. So let's say that you had identity theft. What do you do? First thing, report the crime to the Federal Trade Commission. There's also an IRS form, 14039, the identity theft affidavit. Fill that out. Request a copy of the fraudulent tax return from IRS. You will get one if it's filed in your name. How about that? Alert all the national credit bureaus, all three. And there's a smaller fourth one, too, but the big three take care of most of it. And then check your online bank accounts. Make sure there aren't any suspicious transactions. Change your passwords for your banking, that kind of thing. That can be very critical. But we know now how to figure out if it happened. We know now the steps to take to try to cure it. But why don't we just prevent it instead? It was many years ago, sitting in this chair, we introduced the concept of the personal identification PIN, the PIN, strictly for IRS and your taxes. Back at the time when it started, you had to live in one of three places to get a PIN: Florida, Georgia, or Washington, D.C. And the reason the program started there was because we live in the hotbed of fraud. Florida is just as you can imagine, it's a white-collar day fishing for a lot of these people. So the people who are most exposed to the problem are the people who were granted the original PINs just for acting or asking. But they would also give you one if identity theft was caught at IRS. They would issue one. All it is a number that you use that nobody else would know. So if somebody tries to file paper or electronic or open up an online account or anything like that, and they don't have the PIN, you can't do it. It costs you nothing. I think it probably took me years ago 5 or 10 minutes to get mine online, and that was back when the websites were slower and the internet was slower and all that. It really is all basically a nothing process. The cheapest insurance money can buy against you having a problem. Because once you do have one, Adam said, we've had a lot of clients who have experienced this, It takes a long time to get straightened out.
Not a lot of clients, one or two, and then a couple of friends.
That's a lot to me.
That have had it, yeah.
It's if it hits you, then it's really bad. So do that, and you will not be disappointed to have one. But then again, remember this too. Make sure you don't lose it. Because if you call and ask them a question and you don't have it, you're not getting an answer.
That could be a problem.
That could be a problem. Yeah. I put mine in some very good places. All right. It's still coming. It's coming soon. And there's still a lot to say about taxes. If you have any questions that are really picky, remember to always call your professional tax preparer. We know a lot about taxes. We do a lot of planning for taxes, but we are not tax people. We are not authorized to prepare returns nor anything like that. So take everything we say about taxes and verify it with your pro. Little disclaimer there. All right. Do you want to say anything more about taxes, or shall we move along?
No. If anyone has any questions about with tax day coming up, though, we're happy to take them. Just give us a call at the station, 222-TALK, and it is getting down to the wire. So if you haven't started thinking about it, it probably needs to happen pretty soon here.
All right. Well, speaking of fraud, there's another thing going around. It's rampant. How many of you out there write out actual paper checks anymore? I do, but I could count them on one hand.
Yeah, and you're probably in the minority on that as
probably.
Well.
Probably. But people who do are experiencing a lot of crime, and it can come right out of your mailbox. And we've known since we were babies that robbing a mailbox is a federal offense. You think that matters to some of these people?
No.
Gum on a string into the blue mailboxes, drag things out. And if they find your check in there, you're done. Or if you live in a neighborhood where you don't necessarily trust everybody who walks by, take them to the post office and mail them indoors at the mail slot. Also, at the front of the UPS store, you will find a mail drop also. And since there's always people there, those would be pretty secure. But don't just put a stamp on an envelope and tuck it in your mailbox with a check in it, because it's not good enough anymore. So what do? They come in and they find your check, and using an acid bath, they take your ink right off the check but leave your name, leave your signature. Then they get to fill in all the numbers by themselves. Now, one way to retard that, most people are familiar with the common ballpoint pen, but there is a type of pen that I got a name for it somewhere, I can't remember, but it's the type of pen that has sort of an inky well type rather than the hard ball type. And what that does is soaks into the paper, and it makes it virtually impossible to erase the writing on it. So if you're going to write checks, I strongly suggest you use that type of pen. And this little tip from Kim Komando, my wife's guru for all things like this. And I think she has a really, really good sense of how to avoid this stuff. If you got to write one, write it with that kind of ink if you can. And if you're going to send someone a check, do it at the post office. I know nobody likes to go there, but you don't have to wait in line to stick it in the mail drop. So get over it if you have that kind of bias against going to the mailbox. How's that?
Yeah, it's not. And honestly, if you're thinking about making a switch to away from checks, it's so easy to do now. Mm-hmm. You can the bank will actually write the check for you on their dime. They'll send it via mail or electronically
I've read that
such a better
many
way to
years
do it.
Ago on Clark Howard, and he said something in his article to the effect of, really? He couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's shocking.
So he tried it, and they do it.
Yep.
It is just incredible. I do mine through ViStar. They all have the same basic service. And what they're doing now that I've noticed recently is they're taking the recipients that do a lot of business, and they're setting up an electronic mailbox so they don't have to create a check, put a stamp on it, and mail it. So anybody who wants their money quicker, All they have to do is establish a relationship with the bank where it can be electronically deposited to them. But if there's, you know, there's some small things that you've got to pay that you don't use recurring on, but if you ask the bank to pay your bill for you, they will do exactly that. They will print a check. They will put it in a sealed envelope, put a stamp on it, and send it where it's going. And you pay nothing extra for that service. Mm-hmm. So why not use it?
I agree. It just these days, the reasons to write a check are getting smaller and fewer in number.
Which kind of indirectly leads us back to the whole problem with cash these days. There are people out there really, really trying to eliminate cash in the society. And they use things like convenience and that sort of thing. You want your money right now, quick settlements. And how should I put this? Be afraid, America. When you hear governments talk about developing a central bank currency and all the convenience and so on, that has nothing to do with what they're trying to do out there. They're trying to do is control everything.
Yeah, definitely. They don't want you to have that autonomy that comes with being able to use cash, and they can track all your transactions and therefore collect taxes on all the transactions, which is really what they're after.
Yeah, and then if crazy Uncle Joe decides someday that you're spending enough money on fill in the blank.
Right.
So we're not going to let you spend this one. Or maybe your car payment's too high. Or maybe your car payment's linked to a vehicle that actually burns hydrocarbons. They could just decide it isn't going to be done. So I want everybody to understand, when you talk about digital currencies and you're dealing in things like Bitcoin, etc., that's risky. But it's nothing compared to what could happen at the federal level. And we'll talk about that more. There is a phone call. Please hold. We'll be right back after the break. This is the Bamley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Bamley Financial Hour. This is Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we dropped caller, I guess, but we still have the trivia question open. Average store that uses nothing but cashiers has a shrinkage problem of about 1.5%. What is that percent for stores who do use the self-checkouts? All right. I got some good news, bad news stuff. I'll just kind of flip back and forth. 3% of the world's oil has been cut over the last half a year. Guess what you're going to be paying more for pretty soon?
Oil production, you mean, has been cut.
Oil production.
Yeah. Okay.
And OPEC just sort of stuck it to us in the last several days.
But can you blame them, really?
No, I can't.
We can't do anything about it, so why wouldn't they raise prices?
But we could. This is my point. We could do something.
But we can't right now because this administration won't do it.
When we were just 2.5 years ago, a net exporter, we had total control.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't care what they charged in Saudi Arabia. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The more they raised their price, the more they'd pay us for our excess oil.
OPEC had been not rendered useless, but they lost a lot of their power when
they
that happened. They
certainly did. And now we've given it all back to them, and we're all going to pay for it, which is one of the longer-run concerns I have about the rate of inflation, because we all know that inflation is largely energy-based. So that we put that one in the stupid column for now. And speaking of stupid, you've probably seen that one of California's taller governors is cruising around Florida right now, telling us what idiots we are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm combining oil and politics.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what California is going to do now?
There at least one city banned new, or that was in Colorado actually, banned new gas stations. Are they going to do that too?
This is not relative to that. This is before it hits the pump. California is establishing a politically appointed commission to review the finances of all the refineries out there. And if they're making too much money, the commission is going to fine it away from them.
Wow.
I am not making this up.
What could go wrong there?
Remember when Hillary Clinton said, I want to take those profits. Yeah. And she was talking about Halliburton, which was a company based in Dubai. Anyway, good morning, Lane.
How are you, gentlemen?
Wonderful. You?
Great.
Good. Happy Easter.
I want to ask you folks a question.
Sure.
I believe my memory is correct that during the Canadian trucking, whatever you call it, the
protest,
where they stopped the caravan that stopped trucking in Canada.
Right.
I believe the government just basically shut down the savings accounts and checking accounts of the truckers, did they not?
You are correct.
So when somebody, you know, when I see somebody in front of me like I did the other day using their card to buy a Coke, you know, they're tracking your every move.
Yep.
And they're in total control. So I just wanted to pass that along.
You're exactly right.
I know it does sound like a conspiracy theory when you say things like the government.
I wanted to take a shot at the trivia if I could.
Well, please do.
I waited until as close to the end as I dared. I believe it's 4%.
It is indeed 4%. And that difference of 2.5% is not all mistakes. There are people using these self-checkouts that are actually outright stealing, and they are being watched by so much surveillance now that some of these people get to the door to exit, and they're greeted by some guy named Vinny who doesn't like what's going on. You have to be very careful of that. But those aren't the people I care about. I care about the people who are making a mistake once in a while. Same problem can happen to you by that way as the other way.
Yeah.
So be careful out there. You know, if you don't hear the ding, it didn't work. So that's it. All right. We know where you live. We'll send you something.
Well,
okay.
And I would like to donate that to the Joe Strong.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Thank you, Lane. That's two that you've donated now. You're going to have you're going to be a whole sponsor level here before too long.
All right.
Don't forget to take the tax deduction that you don't need anymore.
Very good.
All right.
Well, as you all were discussing, it's already in the bank for this year. So file early and avoid that fraud and use that PIN. Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
Happy Easter. Thanks for calling.
Take care. Happy Easter. Bye.
Good morning. Oh, I don't think this call was dropped, set up yet.
No, I think it dropped.
Okay. But if you... if we cut you off or anything, please call back. Anyway, 4%, that's 2.5%. That's a huge cost. You know who pays that? You and me and everybody else.
For sure. All the paying customers will make up for that.
So, and you know, as I said, I'm not at all worried about the people who are doing it on purpose. Those people can go rot anywhere they want to. But it's easy to make a mistake. And what Sarah and I have a rule when we go to Costco, something like that. If we have anything complicated whatsoever, we always go through a person aisle. If it's a very simple thing, you want four or five things that are just boom, 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 fine, do it that way. But if you've got a complex order, you either take your time and make damn sure you got it right or go through a person, because if you make a mistake, they lump you in with the criminals, and that is not a very fun thought the way I think of it. Anyway, so all right, we got time for a little bit more. How about a good news? There are actually two things. The Republicans in Congress are different ones, but they're trying to do a couple of things that I think are really cool. One of them is there's a new push to repeal entirely the estate tax. And I don't know how many of you agree, and I know that it's been modified a lot, and it's now up close to like $13 million a piece, so it affects very few people. But I object to the estate tax on the very simplest grounds. It is nothing more than redistribution of wealth.
I think it's stealing.
I do too.
It doesn't make any sense. You've already paid taxes on that money.
Yeah.
And if you want to give it to your heirs, that should be your right to do without having to be doubly taxed on it. It doesn't make sense.
Now, the scary part here, some of these proposals that are out there right now replace it with the capital gains tax. So, in other words, they would prevent you from getting a step-up in basis on the assets you inherit. That is particularly egregious, I think, because a lot of people inherit funds that are passed down that will eventually be used for their own care and feeding later. So if one of their ancestors thought enough of them to leave money to them, I think we should respect their elders and leave them the money. And
yeah,
whatever the step-up in basis applies one time to the value of the assets on the date of death, and that should pass tax-free. After that, if you're going to have a capital gains tax, you're going to have one. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about simplicity.
There shouldn't be anything in the tax code that makes you sell an asset to inherit an asset. It just doesn't make sense. If someone's trying to leave you something and you can't afford it because of the taxes that have to be paid on it prior to, or however that works, it just doesn't make sense. You should be able to keep the asset no matter what.
And where does it really hit home? When a small business gets inherited, mm-hmm. or worse, at a farm. Farms are the real bugaboo in this. And they even have a special section of the tax code to deal with the farm so that people who inherit have a longer time to pay it off. I get an idea, people. We need every farmer we can get. Just leave them the farm, period. Leave them alone. I don't know why people should have to go through all of this. It just bothers me when I see the jealousy and so on entering into the tax code. It really jacks my jaws. So congratulations to some of the people who are putting the ideas out there. There's at least one of them that just eliminates the whole problem whatsoever. Will it happen? I don't know. We got rid of it once, and it lasted a year, and we brought it back. Mm-hmm. That's how ingrained in the D.C. culture the estate tax is.
Oh, politicians love the estate tax.
Now, when I was young, studying economics, I was always taught that it costs more to collect it than they get in revenue. Now, I don't know if that's true today or not.
I don't think so at all.
But it is not a big money maker. In fact, in some of the graphs,